I will say specifically what I mean about contractions. And they provide non-trivial relations between Lie algebras and Lie groups that have been useful in different theories of gravities. Okay? So also I'm going to speak about a peculiar kind of symmetry that appears in some sectors of Lovelock theories. Okay? And in general, in theories that includes higher curvature terms. So they are called accidental because of a reason that I'm going to show you now. So this is the plan of the talk. I will start with a brief introduction, explaining the context and the main motivations about the problem I am currently working on. It is not completely solved yet, but I'm going to show some results. And then I'll follow with the two main parts of the talk, one in which I explain what expansion methods are. And then I will show how accidental symmetries appear when we look for charged spherically symmetric black holes in a Chern-Simons theory that is constructed in terms of the ADS symmetry cross U1 with an electromagnetic field. So let's start with the general context. What we are going to use is first order formalism to formulate gravity, which amounts to describe gravity in terms of field vein and spin connection as independent fields. And dynamics is then described by Riemann curvature and torsion. As you know, for example, in D=4, Einstein-Cartan theory is equivalent to Einstein-Hilbert theory in four dimensions. But this theory, Einstein-Hilbert theory, is philosophically different. It is completely metric theory. Everything depends on the metric. But one needs an extra assumption which tells us that torsion is zero. Instead, or in the Einstein-Cartan gravity, torsion equals zero comes from as an equation of motion from this Lagrangian. So this was the idea introduced by Palatini, that he said that, OK, one can choose when formulating gravity between having more variable, less variables and more assumptions, or the contrary. So we use this one that we have less assumptions. Okay, so gravity, these two theories in four dimensions are completely equivalent. The dynamics is the same. When we look for a generalization in higher dimensions, we found that the most general action that respect the principles of general covariance, the equivalence principle, and that gives second order equations in terms of the metric, is given by the Lanczos Lovelock theory. And it looks like this. It is a polynomial in the curvature. So for example, for p=1, one gets the usual d-dimensional Einstein-Hilbert action. Okay? So in that context, there are many families of theories that one can have by choosing different parameters alpha. Okay? So for example, I'm just presenting some results to explain the context where we are going to work. For example, when on this work, Troncoso Zanelli in 2000, they showed that requiring the theory to have maximum possible degrees of freedom leads to a special choosing of these parameters that get fixed completely in terms of the gravitational and the cosmological constant. which in even dimensions gives Born-Imfeld gravity, and in odd dimensions, the one we are interested in on this problem, is given by the ADS Chern-Simons gravity, whose dynamics is constructed by this Euler topological invariant. It is such that its exterior derivative is this Euler invariant. So where this A is the one-form gauge connection, which is evaluated on the generators J and P, which generates this SOD in the dimensions. F is the strength field, and this bracket represents a symmetrized trace, okay, which gives invariant tensors for this Lie algebra. Okay? Yes?
So what does it mean choosing it to have the maximum number of possible degrees of freedom? Because I thought Lovelock theory always has the same number of degrees of freedom as pure Einstein gravity.
Lovelock only when you consider Lovelock as a metric theory has the same degrees of freedom.
As a metric theory.
As a metric theory.
So it's not equivalent.
So when you add torsional degrees of freedom, then this is not true anymore. Yeah. In fact, yes, in the dimensions there's a work also Zanelli, Taylor-Boyne. They found the number of degrees of freedom in dimensions is d multiplied by d minus 3/2 is the number of degrees of freedom of metric Lovelock theory in the dimensions. But we are going to consider first order formalism, as I said, by considering spin connect, also considering torsional degrees of freedom.
The torsion is propagating in these?
Torsion has propagating degrees of freedom. In fact, from here, torsion is not appearing, but the field equations in the dimensions allows to have a torsional degrees of freedom. It's not like in four dimensions. In four dimensions, one of the field equations tell us that torsion must be zero. So in that sense, in the spirit of Palatini, this information that you have to use Christoffel symbol is already contained on the Lagrangian. But the price we have to pay is that we have to include more variables. Okay, and in the dimensions, then torsion equals zero is only one specific solution. And so then there are two particular families which are of interest, which are given by this Born-Imfeld and this the Chan-Simons one in all dimensions. This work in all dimensions because this topological invariant can only be constructed in even dimensions. And for example, how does it look this in five dimensions? Chan-Simons theory in five dimensions look like this. It has an Euler term only in terms of field lines. It has an Einstein-Hilbert term with one curvature and Gauss-Bonnet extended to five dimensions. Well, another interesting family that I'm going to show also is a pure Lovelock theory that has been recently introduced in 2010, which corresponds to only choose as non-vanishing constant this alpha zero and alpha n, where n is this d minus 1/2. So this amounts in even dimensions, for example, to have a theory with many r's and one e in all dimensions plus cosmological constant. And in even dimension, you obtain with two field lines plus e. So it is such that it contains the zero order in curvature and the higher order in curvature which contributes to the field equations. That's why here, if you put here, you need these two forms here in order to contribute to the field equations. If you put R here, this is just an invariant, topological invariant. So it is just a total derivative, okay? So that's how it looks in odd and even dimensions, this pure Lovelock theory. And it is, as I will tell you about that, they are interesting by the fact that their black hole solutions have the correct Einstein limit. They go to Schwarzschild ADS geometry for large R. And also they have some interesting thermodynamics properties. So this is alpha n, alpha zero. And this is then in odd and even. So exactly, this can be, in fact, if you're right. Here, I choose this to be ABS, but of course, if you choose here Poincaré, then you have a theory which contains only this term. And this term, in fact, it is, you can obtain this term, Poincaré, by taking this parameter L to some specific limit. So the Newton-Wigner contraction here is well defined, but I'm going to explain maybe later that.
Yeah. Ghosts, because if there's more propagating degrees of freedom from the torsion.
Well, they don't have it because the way as they are constructed is it is required that they give to second order field equations. They are not higher derivatives theories.
I mean, any higher order equation, you can always make it second order by introducing additional variables. The question is whether the degrees of freedom that are there have right sign kinetic terms and so on.
But all higher derivatives can be arranged in a way that they go as a boundary term. So theory is not a higher derivative in that sense.
Yeah, I guess I'm not worried about higher derivatives. I'm worried about extra degrees of freedom. There's propagating torsion.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to linearize this theory around ADS, its ADS vacuum, I would expect that it looks like it just looks like Einstein-Hilbert, like linearized Einstein-Hilbert. So it looks like it just has the degrees of freedom of a graviton around the ADS background. But then non-linearly, you're saying it has more degrees of freedom.
In fact, you cannot, for example, Schwarzschild solutions are not a part of these theories. They have not their solutions are different.
Maximally symmetric solution.
Yeah, vacuum solution is still, yeah. But it is the degenerate.
Yeah,
vacuum solution is
the degenerate. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you can ask your question, you just run the plot, right? We should expect the same thing.
Plot space is probably not the solution, but maybe you'll say more about the degenerate solution.
Okay. So what we will see on this talk is that there might be on these higher curvature theories degenerate sectors in the space of solutions. What we mean is that there are some variables that are not fixed by the field equations. When you impose the field equations, your system depends still of some arbitrary functions. The most simple case is if you consider in this Lovelock theory I show you, if you consider this ansatz for a spherically symmetric static black hole in the torsionless sector, let's say that, then the field equation reduces to this polynomial that has to be solved. This F is related with this psi here. So field equations reduce to this polynomial in psi. Okay, and it appears this parameter mu, which is the mass parameter. And these alphas are the same, are related with the ones of the original algebra, just they are renamed here to express this polynomial in a more simple way. So what happens? Well, and the vacuum of this theory will be represented for this mu equals zero. So it was shown by Wheeler long ago in the 80s that when this polynomial has degenerate zeros, then the field equations leaves this component of the metric arbitrary. So they are not physical anymore, and he called them geometrically free solutions. Okay. So in order to reduce the arbitrariness of the theory, because on the Lovelock theory you have many arbitrary constants, one way is to choose to assume full degeneracy. So you have only one vacuum, and is completely degenerate, which amounts to choose exactly these alpha constants as in the Bonn-Neumfeld or Chern-Simons case, depending if you are in odd or even dimensions. This is one way to do it. And there are black holes until some order, k, until the maximum permitted. All these black holes were calculated here in this paper, which is called the black hole scan for this Chern-Simons and Bonn-Neumfeld theories. And they are known as dimensionally continued black holes. They have this form. And as you can see, they are, for large R, they are not going to the Schwarzschild LDS or ADS. In fact, this is the point, as I showed at the beginning, the Chern-Simons for the ADS, it contains three terms. When you make this parameter L going to infinite or to zero, you got or the cosmological constant or the Gauss-Bonnet term alone, but never leaves you with the Einstein-Hilbert term. So there is no limit in which Chern-Simons goes for ADS goes to Einstein-Hilbert theory, standard general relativity in D dimensions. So neither it happens at the level of the solutions, of course. The other way is to choose the coefficients as in the pure Lovelock case. In this case, we have this equation, and the black holes looks like this, and they have the correct limit, Einstein-Hilbert limit, and when r goes to the horizon radius, goes to the black holes, to the geometry of the dimensionally continuous black holes. So, well, this was just an example to show that in Lovelock theories there can be degenerated sectors. In this case, it was the sector in which you are looking for solutions, static spherically symmetric black hole solutions. You choose, for example, a cosmological solution. It can happen also that you can go to different branches with degeneration. Okay, and then by choosing the theory, selecting special theories, by selecting these parameters, you can avoid this kind of arbitrariness and get lack of this degeneration. Well, this work also deals with these expansion methods of Lie algebras and also some gravity theories constructed with them. Okay, I will show just in just few slides forward, I will show what they are. And the idea is the following, that with Olivera Mishkovic, who's the sponsor professor of my project, my postdoctoral project in Chile, we were curious to explore the solutions that exist in theories constructed with the expansion method. So I mean, we look for Acher-Simons actions that here depends on on a one-form gauge connection. And when these generators are, for example, ADS, if this algebra is ADS, OK, we know these results that I mentioned, that they not go to Einstein-Hilbert term. But one can use different groups here. Poincaré, you have another Chan-Simons actions. For example, in three dimensions, if you choose Lorentz only, gives you this exotic gravity. What we wanted to, people wanted to explore at some moment, it was to create a special Lie algebra that can be obtained from the ADS as a, some kind of contraction, okay? And to look if it is possible for this Chan-Simons constructed in terms of this special Lie algebra, if this goes to Einstein-Hilbert dynamics, okay? So there are some works, in fact, that allows to do that, to construct the Chan-Simons theory in terms of a special symmetry that connects with Einstein-Hilbert. And some black holes and cosmological solutions have been found, but without charge. And in fact, we wanted to explore the possibility of finding some special geometries that can have an application that could be interesting in the context of ADS CFT because of the following motivations. First, that four-dimensional holographic quantum field theory at finite temperature is dual to five-dimensional black hole in ADS, in asymptotically ADS gravity. As you know, non-perturbative phenomena and phase transitions in quantum field theory can be analyzed holographically. And there are, in fact, different kinds of superconductors whose theoretical description until now is only based on holography. So in general, for these superconductors, the field content, it is a gravitational field, electromagnetic field, which is needed to, in some sense, to measure this superconductivity, and plus a symmetry breaking, okay, to produce this phase transition. For example, scalar fields in ADS gravity is related with a order parameter in quantum field theory. And also there are other works that that has a Gauss-Bonnet holographic superconductors minimally coupled to a scalar field. The point is that when you, what we mean by Gauss-Bonnet gravity is the theory that contains this cosmological term in five dimensions, for example, the Einstein-Hilbert, and plus here Gauss-Bonnet term, like this. So when these parameters alpha 0, alpha 1, and alpha 1, and alpha 2 are fixed in different ways, you got different theories. In when this parameter alpha, when alpha 0 and alpha 1 are related to cosmological and gravitational constant, then this alpha gives you the coupling constant with this Gauss-Bonnet term. And when this alpha goes to the Chern-Simons limit, when it gets a specific value, then there are some problems that I will show you later how it is that. So what we wanted to make is, with the problem we want to face, we still don't solve it, but we are going there, is that we want to study an holographic quantum quantum field theory dual to a Chern-Simons gravity, which is constructed in terms of an expansion of the ABS algebra. Okay. And as a first step, we started looking for which are the charged solutions that are known for a Chern-Simons gravity coupled to U1 field. And we found that there were some results, but the study was not complete. And that's why, well, we wanted to make that in order to look for the most simple extension of the ABS algebra, to look how this is working, and then pass to the more complicated case of an expanded algebra. Okay, so the objectives for the first part is to briefly introduce the main properties, to describe only what expansion methods are. And in the second part, I will show that when we look for charged solutions in this Chern-Simons theory for ABS cross U1, first, the presence of charge required that we have to have a torsional degrees of freedom, okay? Requires non-vanishing torsion. Otherwise, if torsion is zero, gravity decouples from the electromagnetic field, okay? And then we're going to see that there are some degenerated sectors that appear in the space of solutions, okay? In the sense that there are arbitrary functions, there are functions that remain arbitrary after the field equations are imposed, okay? And as they happen to be exist only in some sectors, they are called like this accidental. And then, just to explain why this knowledge, it was useful to identify physical solutions, because before going to the holographic application. And then this is something we learned before going to this application with expanded algebras, okay? So, any question until here? Yeah?
So you're finding these arbitrary functions in a specific, when you put in a specific ansatz for the solutions, you find additional arbitrariness. So you have like a gauge symmetry that's present in the reduced action just for that particular ansatz, which isn't present in the full theory. I would worry that that means you just have a strongly coupled solution. The solutions are strongly coupled because you have degrees of freedom in the full theory that aren't being seen with this ansatz.
I didn't understand the question. Excuse me.
So the full theory has some number of degrees of freedom. The full Chern-Simons theory has some number of degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
Now you're choosing a particular ansatz for the solutions.
That's the point. That the full Chern-Simons theory does not have a precise number of degrees of freedom. There are sectors in the space of solution. The phase space is stratified in different sectors carrying different numbers of degrees of freedom. In fact, I will show now that this is what we learn with this. Yeah, yeah. So this is the point. We will show that when we solve the field equations for, we choose the sector of static spherically symmetric black holes. This is already one sector. But to have chart.
But that's a specific ansatz that's restricting this particular
Yeah, this is a specific ansatz. Even then, you can find different sectors because as we have torsional degrees of freedom, there are some components of torsion that when they are zero or non-zero, leads you to different branches. Some of their branches are has this problem of degeneration, some other not. And what we make is to identify on these branches which where we can find a well-defined black hole solution. In the other ones, we just discarded this to, like, to clean where we can find a well-defined physical solution.
But you're just talking about properties of these particular spherically symmetric solutions. That doesn't tell you about the number of degrees of freedom in the full theory. Like suppose you were to study small fluctuations around these solutions mm-hmm. and count the number of degrees of freedom of those small fluctuations. Would those fluctuations be strongly coupled or not?
Well, when we make the we make both Lagrangian formalism and Hamiltonian formalism, and shown that if we put the ansatz on the action and look how the dynamics is, well, it depends on how your ansatz was at the beginning. Because I will show that what we are going to ask the torsion is to have only the same symmetries of the metric, so spherically symmetric and static. And then we are left with a set of components of the torsion that are allowed. Even though when we have this set of torsional functions, if they are switch on or switch off, leads you to different branches. Some of them carries in all of these branches, you can find different degrees of freedoms for the theory.
Yeah, I guess my worry would be about if you study non-symmetric and non-static
okay.
fluctuations, so activating all the degrees of freedom of the theory, would those fluctuations be strongly coupled okay. around these backgrounds?
I will show that also in non-static case, there are also degenerate sectors. And we expect also this to happen in if you look for another kind of solutions, like cosmological, for example. So let's continue. The expansion methods, well, the basic idea is that they are examples of procedures given non-trivial relations between Lie algebras. And they allow to understand interrelations between physical theories. This is the interesting fact for us. And the most simple example was proposed by Segal. It was the concept of contractions that he proposed that if two physical theories like special relativity and Newtonian mechanics are related by means of a limit process, then their corresponding symmetry groups under which they are invariant should be also related by a limiting process. That leads to the concept of Unno-Wigner contractions. It is made when you have a group, a Lie algebra, and also a subalgebra L. So then what you have to make is just to rescale the generators of the coset by some parameter and perform some specific limit. The most common example is this, as you obtain, for example, Poincaré from ADS algebra in four dimensions. You write ADS algebra in this way, with this AB from 1 to 5. So then rescaling these generators with this parameter L leads to a new algebra that for these generators, the Lie commutator changes like this. So then in the limit R going to infinite, you obtain the corresponding commutator for translations that are abelian in the case of Poincaré. Okay? This is the idea of Unno-Wigner contraction. Different mechanisms have been appearing in the literature to find these non-trivial relations between Lie algebras. Many generalizations were made. The most general is known as the Wigner-Woods. And in the context of string theory, Hatsuda and Sakaguchi from Japan, they were studying string theory, looking for the flat limit of a supercharge. And they found that the usual Unno-Wigner contraction does not leave the correct limit. So they proposed another procedure, which instead of rescaling rescaling generators, some of the generators of the Lie algebra, they perform a rescaling of the coordinates of the Lie group, and they provide an old procedure. And also in parallel, this was made by Descarga in Spain, and he used this idea to provide an old procedure that allows you to generate in a dual formulation of the Lie algebra in terms of Morel-Cartan forms, different Lie algebras that reproduce all the generalized contraction procedures, but they are called expansion, not contraction, because also allows you to obtain algebras of higher dimensions, okay? For example, if you obtain Poincaré from ADS, they both have the same dimension. You break the semi-simplicity of ADS, but you got an algebra of the same dimension. In this case, we can they can recover all these contraction procedures, but also are allowed to obtain algebras of higher dimensions. And the relation is non-trivial in the sense that the original one is not necessarily contained as a subalgebra in the resulting one. So it is not just an enlargement or extension of the algebra. That's why they are not called only extension. I forgot to mention. So in 2006, the same procedure was reformulated by using semigroups in a more general scheme that allows to obtain these expansion methods for a specific family of semigroups, and also allows for different semigroups, allows to obtain even more different, even new non-trivial relations between Lie algebras. Okay, and that's why that is the context in which I've been working during the last years. So some of the advantages of this expansion method is that, okay, it has a direct supersymmetric extension. It provides invariant tensors. If you know the invariant tensors of the original algebra, then the procedure gives you invariant tensors for the resulting algebra, even if the resulting algebra is not semi-simple, okay? As you know, mathematicians have theorems that tell you that for all semi-simple algebras, they have classified all the invariant tensors and Casimirs. But for non-semi-simple ones, sometimes you can calculate invariant tensors as symmetrized traces, but sometimes they are not so useful. This is the case of this work made by Saurieta, where they are able to find this supersymmetric extension, maximal supersymmetric extension of the Poincaré algebra in 11 dimensions called the M algebra. They found that this algebra can be obtained as an expansion of the orthosymplectic algebra 32.1, which is semi-simple, and instead the M algebra is not non-semi-simple. So they wanted to calculate the transimons associated to that algebra, but when they calculate with the symmetrized trace, you have many components of the invariant tensors equal to zero. So finally, the transimons action almost carries non-dynamics, so it is not interesting. And it is non-semisimple, so it is not easy to find invariant tensors for non-semisimple algebras or superalgebras. And this procedure allows to write invariant tensors for the EM algebra, which are not the supersymmetrized trace, and that are useful to construct an interesting transimons action for this carrying dynamics, which is interesting. Okay, so this is one of the advantages of this method that allows you to transmit information from semi-simple algebras to other algebras that are non-semi-simple. And these invariant tensors are useful not only in transimons, of course, also in Young-Mills, in general engaged theories. A dual formulation in terms of Morel-Cartan forms was also performed, and then also an extension to the case of one gauge forms. So one is able to expand directly on this one gauge connection. And this has been useful to construct Lagrangian that are invariant, that are constructed under expansion of the ADS, as I mentioned here. And that allows to connect with standard general relativity is what I already told you. Okay, so I'm going a bit faster on this part. As I mentioned, all the expansion methods and contractions can be reobtained by using a specific family of semigroups satisfying this multiplication law. And using another semigroups, it is possible to obtain other kind of relations that are new. Okay. During my thesis, I was working on this question, in fact, because there were different physical applications that can be obtained when you can are able to relate in a non-trivial way some symmetries. So I wanted to understand the main properties of this expansion method in the general context of classifications of Lie algebras. So the basic idea is you give me two Lie algebras. We wanted to answer if they can be related or not by these non-trivial procedures. So we make that in for whatever semigroup, which are classified in literature since long ago, since the 50s. And they are many. So we got some, we make two things. We got some criteria that allows to say if one relation is forbidden or not. And then also we write a lot of algorithms that allows to find the relation in different cases. So this is representing like this. In the general context of the classification, we found that some properties, for example, solvability or nilpotence, are preserved. So if you start from here, you always fall on the same set. But properties like semi-simplicity or compactness can be broken or preserved. Okay, this will depend on specific properties of the semigroup you are using on the expansion. So this is a work mainly I made with my professors in Italy, Mario Triante and Laura Andrianopoli. So we have found some, well, and also we make this a lot of algorithms to find, as I said. So we apply this procedure as an example in the case of Bianchi algebras. Bianchi classified some spaces that admit n-dimensional spaces that admit an n-dimensional symmetry that is acting transitively. In two dimensions, you can have only these two kinds of spaces, which are the plane and the hyperboloid. And in three dimensions, instead, you have these nine kind of spaces, okay? And these are the algebras. We wanted to know if it is possible to start from these two-dimensional isometries and obtain these three-dimensional ones. And we found that only these four algebras can be obtained as an expansion of this algebra here. And the one which is interesting is the one type 2, because this does not contain the original one as a subalgebra, so it is a non-trivial relation. The other ones instead contains the original one as a subalgebra, so it is a kind of extension. And particularly, we are currently working on extending this procedure in the case of a Lie group acting on a general manifold, which can represent a spacetime. Okay, in particular, how to relate the Killing vectors here and the metrics. So. Because as the metric can represent some solution of general relativity or cosmology, we expect that this can be useful to understand solutions of these theories constructed with expansions. Okay. And however, an important issue related to degeneracy must be considered because they happen to be in some sectors of the space of solutions. And this is the subject of the next part and last part. So. Want to hear any question? Okay, let's continue. So we consider then we wanted to study which are the possible charge solutions we can have in Chern-Simons theory for ABS cross U1. Okay, so the one form gauge field is this one. This is the field strength. The action looks like this. It's a sum of here the IDS, Chern-Simons Lagrangian, the Chern-Simons for U1, and an interaction term which couples non-minimally the electromagnetic field with these topological invariants with Pontryagin and Niyang. Okay. So field equations looks like this, and this F is representing the ABS curvature, and we are going to look for the charge solutions to these field equations. So we assume static spherically symmetric ansatz carrying these 7 Killing vectors, and using a Riemann-Cartan formalism, we split these group indices in such a way that a field vine is related to these fields in this manner. So as I mentioned also, we demand the electromagnetic field and the torsion to have the same symmetries of the space-time, which amounts to demand this that it's the derivative along the same Killing vectors of the metric gives you this. So this restricts the possible components of the electromagnetic field and the torsion to be only these components. So the system to solve it contains these 8 functions. And here it happens that then when we replace this on these field equations that I mentioned here, these 3 field equations are written in differential form, so they carry many, many information. There are many equations here. So all these equations reduces to only 4 independent field equations when we replace these ansatz. Okay? So, yeah.
So it looked to me like in your ansatz, you were assuming that GTT times GRR was -1. Yeah, there.
Yeah.
So you're just putting that additional restriction in by hand? That doesn't have to be true in general.
We're putting by hand the ansatz?
Yeah, you're making more restrictive ansatz than you need to.
What do you mean that maybe we can choose different
functions? Functions in general.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we made that in the Hamiltonian formalism because you're right. There is when we make the analysis for Hamiltonian analysis and we replace the ansatz, then making variation on the fields cannot lead you to the same equation field equations if you let's say. Yeah, there's a theorem of Paley that says that it is called this minima the superspace approximation minimal. I forgot the name, sorry, but you're right that it is important to choose here different in at the beginning, and then the field equations tell you that they are different. Yeah, on the paper we did it like that. Yeah. I should hear for maybe I made a mistake to put only F. Okay. But the system we can have then all the same, and here you will have another H and all the field equations for these equations here in the paper we put it also with the H, make all the analysis with this H. Yeah.
Okay,
thank you. Yeah, we'll change that. So this is the field, the general field equations when all the torsional components are switched on. But for example, if what happens if we only switch on one component, which is this psi, then all the other ones are zero, and we have there is a solution calculated on, by Canfora, Troncoso, Giacomini. For this psi, it corresponds to the axial torsion. And they consider a solution in that case. And this is one branch, OK? And the solution is well defined there. There's no problem. But then if you turn on, as this is not charged, we want to, in fact, we calculated the general solution with all of them switch on. And I will show you that the general solution depends on 3 arbitrary functions. The idea, the analysis, it is here. That we want to turn on the components of the torsion one by one in a way that that we can find the most simple case in which electromagnetic field is non-vanishing, okay? So the case, for example, when we add this component psi r only different than zero, and then this one, all the others equal to zero, lead us to this solution, which is well-defined. It has some analogies to black holes in 3 dimensions, in 5 dimensions. I need to run a bit here. There is a parameter which is considered as a hair. We calculate also corresponding horizons and Hawking temperatures, entropy. But the important things I want to mention here is that if you then add another component of the torsion, for example, this psi t, if it is added, then the solution depends on this arbitrary function theta, okay? So, and then if you add whatever other combinations, always you got between 1 and 3 arbitrary functions. So the general solution depends, in fact, of 3 arbitrary functions, okay? So in particular, the metric is not physical anymore, okay? What happens is that here in this paper, Bañados, Garay, and Oh, they shown that the appearance of arbitrary functions arise from degeneracies on the symplectic matrix on certain sectors of the space. So when this symplectic matrix has a jump in the range, then you got you go for different jump from one sector to another sector carrying different degrees of freedom. So in those sectors, when the system acquires an extra local symmetry, it loses some degrees of freedom. And on this paper, they calculate everything assuming in the sector what they call the generic sector, which is the one which carries the maximal degrees of freedom. And I will show here that these black hole solutions we are looking for, it is not in the generic sector, okay? In fact, well, this is the conclusion. And this is a behavior that not only happens in gravity, also in many mechanical systems, okay? So we saw at the beginning that in Lovelock theory, there were sectors where there are some degeneracy. And when this happened, there is an indeterminacy on the dynamical evolution. And this behavior has been reported also in the torsionless case. It is not a problem that we are in torsion here, okay? As well as in the Einstein-Gauss-Bonnet ADS gravity. And also, it is not a problem of considering static ansatz. Also, it was shown here that there are different branches with arbitrary functions. Some branches are well defined. I'm not saying that all the theory has to be through it, but we need to recognize when there are sectors of this kind in order to select which one is a real physical solution. It has been argued in literature that in five-dimensional Chern-Simons ADS gravity can be this arbitrariness can be removed by changing the cosmological constant. So here, if you change the cosmological constant, then you are this is effectively to go out from the Chern-Simons family. So this amounts to have a Chern-Simons gravity, and then you can avoid this degeneracy. And also by gauge fixing, but this is something that we consider that cannot be done. That's why we report this result, because on this work, Aroston Contreras, first Bañados in one paper claims that Chern-Simons for ADS cross U1 with an electromagnetic field, it is not possible to find a Schwarzschild-like solution. And then they prove that it is possible. What happened there is that they consider a branch in which, in fact, they obtain this metric like Schwarzschild here. but plus an arbitrary function that they set to be zero, as like fixing some gauge. But this is not allowed after you impose the field equations. We mean that you first choose your ansatz and then go by solving the field equations. But if the field equations that leaves you arbitrary functions, they are like that. And so that's why it was this kind of a contradiction between if there was or not a Schwarzschild-like solution in this theory. The reason is that they are not, because a solution having arbitrary functions can be anything. So the presence of these arbitrary functions are in general solutions of are consequence of a local symmetry. We prove that this symmetry is not a residual symmetry of these gauge transformations. So they are not a gauge symmetries and neither diffeomorphism. So what happened is that in our background, it is not generic, in the sense that generic is that has maximal degrees of freedom, and possesses additional local symmetries, which are called accidental because happens to exist only in certain sectors. And we proved that the field equations are insensitive under these infinitesimal changes, which induces this transformation on the fields. And we put all this in the field equations, and field equations are invariant. So by the Lagrangian point of view, we found that there is a symmetry which is not gauge, not diffeomorphism. This symmetry is just abelian, because this transformation acting upon any field has this commutator equals zero. And this symmetry cannot be a Cartan subgroup of the gauge group, because we proved that there are not residual symmetries. And also, we perform all the Hamiltonian analysis completely independent path. And we shown that on our sector, there is only 1 degrees of freedom, which is different from the case of the generic one. In the generic one, there are 14. The Hamiltonian is invariant under four parameter local symmetry, which reduces to the three parameter transformations. And they happen to be exactly the same for completely different, let's say, path. We found that exactly the same. Exactly the same transformations. Okay. So with this, I'm finishing, and conclusions is here. So what we wanted to show you is that in general, the degeneracy in the space of solution may appear in different kinds of higher curvature theories for gravity, in cases with and without torsion, static and non-static. I forgot to mention that also. In particular, we present this example, a charged black hole solution in ADS cross U1, and we saw that there exist degenerate branches on this sector. Okay, and in contrast with the Chan-Simons gravity for U1 field, that a generic which possesses maximal number of degrees of freedom, which is 14th in this case, we have found that in our case there is only one dynamically propagating mode. And indeed, the missing degrees of freedom between 14th and 1 are related with this increase in the local symmetries. And thus, this example is an explicit realization of a non-generic Chan-Simons gravity. In particular, this shows that the knowledge of this kind of accidental symmetries is useful to avoid some degenerate ansatz. And in this way, it was that we could identify the two interesting solutions that are on this theory. One is the torsion, the axial one, already known in literature, and the new one we report having two components of torsion. And this issue is what we learned just to make the next step to the when we want to look for a black hole study, how and perform the Hamiltonian analysis on Chan-Simons, but now for not an ADS cross U1, but a more different algebra, which is an expansion. And this is all I think. Thank you. Any question?
From what I understood, these extra symmetries are not symmetries of the full theory. Right?
Exactly. Are not exactly the original action. The Cheung-Simons action is invariant under this ADS cross U1. And this is the gauge, what we call the gauge symmetry, exactly. And of course, as it is written in first order formalism with differential forms, is invariant under the diffeomorphisms. So the theory has these two symmetries. But when you go to study solutions, you can find these extra symmetries. Yeah. And in fact, I'm wondering, because this level of theories, these higher curvature terms are supposed to come from corrections from string theories. So I wonder if string theories, they are related in some way with corrections coming from there. And I wonder when people look for solutions on these theories, if they have some kind of this, some behavior like this. Because this happened when we consider high curvature terms. This is coming from there, in some sense. So, and what we feel that it was important is just that it helps to identify which is the physical solution and that can be useful.
Yeah, I'm worried that they're not useful because there's strongly coupled. You looked at fluctuations around these solutions, they'd be sort of infinitely strongly coupled.
You mean which parameter?
Anytime you have a solution.
Is that just kind of a Murphy's Law kind of argument? Or?
Well, it's a situation where you've got a solution around which, when you linearize the theory around that solution, it has fewer degrees of freedom than the full theory. So there's some enhanced symmetry that you're only seeing around a particular solution. It means those other degrees of freedom that aren't going to be eliminated because the symmetry is not the symmetry of your full theory. Those additional degrees of freedom are becoming sort of infinitely strongly coupled near that solution.
Yeah, and that is precisely what is happening here, that we found more local symmetries and this decreased the number of degrees of freedom in some sectors.
So is you saying these additional symmetries are gauge or no?
They are not gauge. Okay. They are not diffeomorphism. This is what.
But they're gauge in the sense they're local. They're local symmetries.
Well, okay. I guess I should specify what I mean. So I mean, are they physically observable? Can you compute observables or can you detect this or not?
The term accidental symmetries was introduced in this paper, Bañados, Garay, Genom. They performed the Hamiltonian analysis for a general algebra, but that can be constructed a general algebra G cross U1, because it was necessary for some technical facts. But then many theories can come in this way. And what they found is that the symplectic matrix can have different rank of this symplectic matrix can change. So if you're looking one solution, one specific ansatz, the rank is one. And if you change the ansatz, you can find another sectors. So this stratifies, in fact, the phase space of the solutions to different sectors, which are not connected, and carries different degrees, number of degrees of freedom. And of course, you cannot go from one here to another here by gauge transformation. This is not allowed there either. So they call them like that, accidental in that sense that can happen in only some certain sectors. And they assume that the symplectic matrix has maximum rank. So this it was described as the generic sector of the theory.
But what we
claim here.
I didn't hear an answer to my question. I mean, if I were doing it, my first thing would be, you know, compute things that I could actually do, you know, look at deviations of GD6 or even curvature variance, something like that, and see if these transformations that you're talking about I can see or not. And if I can, then they're certainly not gauge.
I think you can't. They're local symmetries. You have arbitrary functions in the solution. So in that sense, they're not. They're no observables. The answer is no. At least around this particular onsets.
Well, I don't know why an arbitrary function. I could construct arguments on both sides of that.
So. Anytime you have arbitrary functions in equations of motion, it means you have a local symmetry. Local symmetries are not observable.
Could you, in theory, have theories which are really have the kind where the solutions are really not determined? The solutions.
The analysis said that okay, you have this local symmetry and you have conserved charge for that, but once we got that metric is not physical, we don't care more about this case. So in that sense, I don't know if one can answer which is the physical meaning of these charges, because this should be a way to see if you can measure that. The presence of this local symmetry, right? Measuring these conserved charges.
I mean, to my mind, the key thing would be to decide whether these things are physical or not. If they're not physical and you can interpret them in some sense as your age, then well, who cares, basically? And if they are physical, then I'm saying your solution. You've got a really pathological theory. I don't know why I should be.
There are pathological sectors of the theory.
One pathology is good enough.
Well,
okay, if you could argue that you could never actually achieve it, that might be good enough.
Yeah. Is there any other questions? Okay, if not, that's enough.
Thank you.